Welcome to the RCAF USA Roundup. I'm Shad Sullivan.
And I'm Jaden Moreland, and we're here to talk all things cattle, sheep, and American exceptionalism. We stand for liberty and freedom.
And we are having real and honest conversations about issues that affect your family, your ranch, your community, and most of all, your legacy. So let's jump right in.
Since the pandemic, interest in direct-to-consumer sales has skyrocketed. Consumers are going this route for a variety of different reasons, so how can your ranch capitalize on this and add to your operation? We know this can be overwhelming, and it's just one more thing to add to that never-ending to-do list, so we invited direct-to-consumer marketing expert Mike Parker to join us to break down everything from the details to the whys and the hows of selling your meat. This episode is sponsored by Wild Ass Soaps, real ranch-raised body soap and skincare products made from tallow and lard for hardworking men and women. Wild Ass Soaps is passionate about advocating for animal agriculture by producing a healthy product line that employs healthy animal fat byproducts from regional food systems. They purchase the bulk from their products from small and regional operations and family farms and ranches, and they are true believers in supporting and partnering with other small businesses across the U.S. For more information, find them on their social media or visit their website, wildasssoaps.com. Thanks, Wild Ass Soaps, for your support of RCAF USA and for being a 2023 convention sponsor. Speaking of convention, trade show sponsor and early bird attendee registration for the 2024 RCAF USA National Convention and Trade Show is now open. Join us in Deadwood, South Dakota, June 19th through the 21st to celebrate our 25th anniversary of fighting for American farming and ranching families. Visit rcafconvention.com, no dash in RCAF, to register and for more information. A full agenda of speakers and events will be released in the coming weeks. Okay, welcome back to the RCAF USA Roundup. Today we have with us Mike Parker, and we are going to be talking about all things direct-to-consumer beef, how to market, how to grow, how to start, all of it. And I'm super excited because I'm a nerd for all things marketing and creatively telling stories. So, Mike, why don't you give us just a quick introduction? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, Jaden and Shad, thank you all so much for having me. It's really a pleasure. I love being plugged in with the community and getting to share. So ultimately, my goal is to help farmers and ranchers, right? So getting the chance to share that and talk about it, I'm super excited to do it. So quick background on myself. I grew up in Florida in a subdivision completely off a ranch or off a farm, had nothing really to do with farming and ranching as I grew up, but it wasn't, you know, I went to school, bounced around. I played baseball through school, but I went to school for business marketing, and I always enjoyed business and marketing, and was always something that I was really, really passionate about. And then it wasn't until I got done with school and started working, and, you know, I was doing a lot of business, you know, consulting and marketing for, you know, a lot of local businesses, attorneys, law firms. I even got to work on some national kind of, you know, brand and ad campaigns for, you know, some more national brand stuff, which was really, I was really passionate about, really enjoyed. And then it was kind of through COVID for me that I really got, like a lot of people, I'm sure you've heard that story, kind of, you know, getting plugged back into, you know, where your food comes from and having that sustainability and being able to, you know, really enjoy and live that lifestyle. And so I have two little girls, and I started for me with a Google search during COVID was like, hey, how do you raise food for a family of four? And I started researching that and diving into it. So I live on 7 acres up here in North Georgia, and, you know, like I said, entrepreneurial background for me actually started, and I've ran a couple different businesses as well that were a lot in the service industry. But when I started diving into like, hey, what do I need to do to raise food for a family of four? Okay, if I can raise a whole beef, you know, maybe a few hogs, you know, raise about 100 meat chickens and have a big garden and whatnot, that's great. My girls can enjoy it. I can do that with them. We can be self-sufficient. But then the entrepreneurial thing ticked in my brain, was like, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm sure other people would like to buy it, and maybe I'll start doing it and start selling it. And so that's where it started for me. That was kind of like my gateway into the community, into the, you know, world of agriculture. And I dove in with 2 feet, really got involved, started learning and growing and doing all kinds of different things. I actually started selling direct to consumer meat chickens and pork. Pasture raised pork was kind of the way that we did it. And it was great. But I really quickly realized that, hey, there's a lot of skills that I have from my previous experience and a lot of the work that I've done that a lot of farmers and ranchers really need help with, right? And there's a lot of great farmers and ranchers doing great things and providing great products, and they just are missing that point of connection with the community. And so that's where I started doing what I'm doing now with direct farm marketing, was really specifically helping farmers and ranchers, kind of from my background, sell their products direct to consumer.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think, like you said, there's so many people that are they're so far removed from the farm now. And I think COVID woke a lot of people up of they walked in the grocery store and all of a sudden, for the first time in their lives, there was no meat. And so that scared a lot of people. And I think because of that, more recently, we have seen such an increase in the shift to buying food directly from the source. And you know, there's been a laundry list of reasons why people do that. And I want to get to that. But let's start with why, just like me or Shad, why should we start? Shad sells his own beef, I should say that. But my family does not sell our beef direct to consumer. So like, why should an operation like my family, why should they consider adding direct to consumer to that operation?
Yeah, so I talk to a lot of different farmers every single day, farmers and ranchers all across the country, and with different backgrounds, different size operations. And I think the opportunity of selling direct is a very unique opportunity. One, it gives you the ability to kind of build your own business. I think for so long, farmers and ranchers never had the ability to really build a business, to build their own customers, and to have their own operation that they really controlled and managed. They were kind of more separated from the market. They weren't so tied to, whoever was buying their commodity or what it was that they were producing. And I think it really makes a difference depending on the size of the operation for the family. Some of my larger operations, like my larger cow-calf operations, for them, they're not going to sell, let's say, 1,000 head direct to consumer every year. Okay. But for them, being able to diversify a part of their operation, right, to maybe, give them a little bit of insulation from the cattle market of the fluctuation of prices, it can help them diversify a percentage of their operation. And then, for some of my smaller producers that maybe are operating on, 30, 40 acres, 50 acres, something like that, they just have a few head a year they're trying to sell, want to kind of provide for their community. For them, they might be feeding out feeder steers all year and they're able to sell, 20 head a year. And they're able to make a little money off their land and make, be able to, pay for their operation, and they enjoy it, and they get to build community and provide themselves, potentially enough money to keep, maybe it's keep a mom at home, maybe it's keep a dad at home off of supplemental income or something like that. So I think it looks different for everybody. But I think the opportunity of building your own business is there. And I think it's something people should at least look into and see if it makes sense for them.
Definitely. And I think especially just with like I was looking at your Instagram the other day and it was, you know, getting away from the big four, getting away from the control of the consolidation of our food supply. And I think that has been another just driver for why people should do it. And I think, you know, you kind of also touched on this earlier of there's just never enough time, it seems like. And some of the marketing aspects of direct to consumer, it's hard to find the time to do it. And so kind of getting into the list of, you know, what each kind of consumer, what their reason is for making the switch. I went to school for ag comm, and one of the things we talked about constantly was our audience. And you can't market to everyone. And to be effective, you have to focus on those specific groups of people. So for the average rancher whose quote unquote marketing team is, you know, them, their spouse, their kid, how do they identify like their ideal customer and how do they attract and focus on that customer?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to dive into that, but I want to take a book, play out of Shad's book here. I'm gonna go down a rabbit hole here, because you mentioned having the time piece there, and I want to talk about the time really of marketing, but then also like something I think is really unique in just the community, right? I told you I'm kind of newer to the community, been kind of in it a few years, and I think the history of where farmers and ranchers have gone and where they've been and what they've been equipped with, and then really just the way that knowledge is passed down from generation to generation is really intriguing to me. And marketing, getting to your question about how do you find the right, customer, like marketing is not something that was ever passed down. You know, like, how do you find the right customers for your business? How do you market these things? Farmers never had to do for generations and generations. And so there's a bit of a disconnect. And the time piece, you know, I talk to people every day. I mean, I have the experience that I have, which I don't know everything. I'm learning things every single day about marketing, but I have it from years of marketing other similar businesses and helping farmers do this and sell direct to consumer. And, you know, I mean, I went to school for it 12 years ago. So I've been doing this for a long time and I'm still learning. So it's no surprise that a farmer who hasn't had to market, hasn't had to learn these skills, or, and really the skills were never passed down. So to get to your question there, Jaden, of like, how do you find and focus on the right person? We don't all have a, you know, infinite hours in the day. We all have 24 hours in the day, just like the next person. And if we've got chores to do and we've got things to do on the farm, we've got, maybe it's another business or maybe it's a, you know, in-town job that we're working and we only have so many hours. If we focus our marketing time on just everybody, because we think everybody has to eat, right? Like everyone needs food. Everyone would like a steak. And sure, that may be true. But if we do that, we're really not effectively using our time, the very limited time that we've stated we don't have. So if we can really narrow down, like, who is it that wants to buy, whether it's beef, pork, chicken, whatever it is, produce, who wants to buy directly from a farmer? And we can really focus on our efforts on speaking to them and providing them something that they want, then we really can kind of get the most use of the time that we're saying we're all kind of short on.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, is the connection to the community. And what, to go back on something that you said earlier, just three generations ago, we were marketing our product farm to table always. My mom, 76 years old, they grew up and they sold cream and eggs and they sold beef. And that's how they bought their school clothes, right? But what happened over the years is we had Congress that allowed these mega corporations to become interwoven into each other, and we lost a bit of competition. And with the loss of that competition, we gained a lot of control. And with that, it created a less profitable system for independent ranchers across the United States. So what we had to focus on, Mike, was numbers. It was all about numbers. And we became unwillingly or unwittingly, we became part of the system that was controlled. And so we became their system. We came into their system without understanding what was happening. And so it had to be a numbers game. My dad, you know, he come out of that and he was always like, it's all about numbers. It's all about numbers. And we ran a lot of cattle. I mean, a lot of cattle, but we had no personal relationship with these consumers in town. And so that disconnect just came to be. It's not something that we meant for it to happen, but with the corporate system coming into play, it came to be, because it was all about keeping our land, making a profit, and doing the best that we could, because we were struggling, especially through after we lost the prosperity of the late of the 60s, the 50s and 60s, the late 70s, and then the 80s were just crap. Right. And so we had to figure out, how are we going to keep our land? Well, we got bigger. We got bigger. It was all about the number. And with that, we lost that relationship. If there was one thing that COVID did for us, like Jaden said, it made the consumer realize that their centralized food system was very dangerous. And that was an opportunity for guys like you and me. We've always sold, six to 10 a year to family and friends. But then COVID opened that up to where we were able to, well, I mean, we don't even advertise. They were just coming to us. And of course we live out, you know, we're different than you. We're way more rural than you are. I mean, it's 10 miles to the nearest neighbor and all that stuff, but it did open up that opportunity to deal with our community. And so that has been a real lifesaver for all of these farm-to-table producers since COVID. And so, but, you know, I think the realization that the centralization was the problem and is the problem, that gives us opportunity. Now, the question is what is the government, what kind of mandates, regulations, what's all coming down the pike for that? Yes, they opened this up for for regional and local packing facilities. But now, what are they going to put on those in terms of environmental regulations that they can't afford? And so, I mean, here I am in a rabbit hole, and I'm sorry, but there's
No.
so it's such a broad picture. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. No, and thanks so much for bringing that up, Shad, because I missed that part of really the timeline, right? Where people were, like you said, I mean, that's where it was, it's where it started. My wife, her grandparents, that's how they grew up. Same way. They grew some cash crops on, the family land, and that's how they what they sold to, make a living on, locally. And I think that's so amazing, right? That it's such a short amount of time that shifted so much. But it's like it
Yes.
almost feels like now that opportunity, like the doors opening up again, it's a little different. I mean, it looks a little different. The way you can market things now, I mean, obviously we've got the internet now, we've got digital marketing, we've got some of these other tools that we can kind of apply into marketing that makes things different. But it's interesting, my wife's grandfather, he grew up again farming in the way you mentioned, but now he's a commercial producer. He's got a commercial contract. And so, but it's funny, the conversations I have with him, he remembers. He sees what we're doing. He's like, wow, I remember when we used to do that, but then we couldn't afford to do it because, like you said, everyone got so big and the margins got so small, they couldn't compete. And now it's almost like the table's starting to turn where it's like, if you can provide a high quality product that people trust, they're willing to pay, you can kind of cut back on that margin a little bit and cut those middlemen out and really get something moving. So I think that's great.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
Chad, where do you want to go next? I feel like we down
Well,
another rabbit hole.
I feel like we could talk about that all day. So
Yeah, I mean, it
let's
is.
keep
And
going there.
we can.
I talk to my mom all the time. She's in Colorado. We ranch in Colorado and in Texas. And I was just talking to her yesterday about those days. And she said, she's 76 years old. She says, I could go out today and I could slaughter my own animal. I could, I grew up where we were harvesting our own chickens. We were slaughtering our own chickens, which is a job I hate and I'll never do again, by the way. But we did it all growing up. And then we milked cows and we sold that cream. And that timeline is even though it's a long time, 30 years, it's not that far. I mean, it went quickly. And so I guess one of the questions I would like to ask you is how to your customer base, how important is the label? Is that I mean, where does that stand in your, like for me, I just, my word is my bond. So when I tell them, I say, I finish them on short grass prairies of Colorado. I'm not going to guarantee they don't get an antibiotic because I'm not going to sit and watch my cattle die. Right. I want to help them where I can help them. And so what I just tell them what I don't have a proof of a label. I don't have a third party verification, but how important do you think that is? In your business.
Yeah, and so I'll kind of preface that with this. My business, we sell like a very kind of, I would say, niched product. We raise pasture raised broilers and pigs, but that's really in a lot of ways more of kind of a we grow for ourselves. We sell a little bit, right? My sister-in-law, she actually does therapy on the farm. She does occupational therapy with the kids in the farm. So she has kids out on the farm that,
Wow.
have some disabilities, and she helps feed the animal, does some cool stuff with them. But my primary thing is direct farm marketing. So it's helping other farmers and ranchers. And so to answer your question, when I look at like all my other clients, right, and their operations, because I've got clients all across the board as far as like production sizes and products they're doing. And I think it's really minimal, Chad. I really do. I think what really matters most is that personal trust and connection. When you shake someone's hand, you tell them, "Hey, I wouldn't do something to this animal that I wouldn't put on my own dinner table." I think that goes a long way with somebody. I think that matters a whole lot. Now, obviously, you've got your certain groups. It's funny because I deal with people who are like, "Oh, if you're not regenerative, you're a terrible farmer. If you're not this,
Right,
you're that."
right.
And I deal with both sides all the time. And so
We
I.
do too.
Yeah. And so I get that world, but I think what matters most is that like you're honest. I think honesty obviously is kind of the number one thing. I don't like when I see people say, "Oh, this is a it's you know it's grass-fed beef, and they're trying to play on the idea of it being grass finished, right? And they're
Right.
trying to kind of play on that. I think that's a little bit of dishonesty, which is not good for anybody. That's kind of the whole problem we're in, why the consumers don't understand the labels, and some of the
Right.
farmers even don't, right? So I think honesty is a big thing. I think when you get down to this direct-to-consumer piece, they just want to know, what are you feeding it? What are you not feeding it? If you can tell me, I'm good with it, kind of thing.
That's awesome. So what do you think, if you were to go into the grocery store and ask somebody, what do you think the most important consideration in buying your meat is for the consumer? Is it taste? Is it price? Is it knowing where it comes from? What is the most important thing?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think it's all the things you just said. I mean, it's going to look different for everybody, right? It's people are going to make the decision on what they're buying on a few things. It's either going to be price, it's going to be quality, right? So, I mean, price just being like, how much does it cost me, right? If someone's living
Right.
on a fixed budget, they're making their only decision is price. They're going to buy the cheapest pack of ground beef that's sitting on the shelf. That's their decision-making factor. Okay, that's that person. You got other people that are going to make their decision based on, quality. If they think something is more of a higher quality than something else, and they're willing to pay an additional dollar, $2, $3 for it, that person, their quality is their only thing. And then there's the level of, like, trust and health, right? So it's, I'm gonna make my decision on what's the healthiest thing. That person might think it's grass finished. That person might think it's something that's, or certified organic. There might be different things that person thinks, but their main driver is health. So we've got, right, like health, price, and then convenience is a really big one too. I mean, convenience is obviously a big factor for customers. I mean, it's
Yeah.
tough to break someone of the habit of just driving down the road and going to the grocery store and picking up whatever's on the shelf. But I think those are your big drivers. And so part of going back to Jaden's kind of original question, what we want to find as direct-to-consumer producers is those people that are willing to buy on the things we can kind of provide at a better value. So that could be quality. If we can provide a better quality product with the grocery store and someone's willing to pay for it, that's one. If we can provide a healthier product and or a product that people trust more than what's at the grocery store, then we can stand alone. And so if we can find the people that are willing to pay a little extra, maybe go out of their way to meet the farmer, meet the rancher, we're in a good spot there.
And that was my next question. Some of our trade organizations, and I will agree, most beef is safe. And I talk beef because that's my business and that's my perspective. But when you have all this imported meat into these grocery stores, and we are all living on a budget, and they can sell it for $2.99 a pound, do you find it harder to sell that $5, I mean $5, $6 pound beef? Or are they willing to actually do that to know all of these questions?
Yeah, it's funny because I'm going to answer that question with something you may not expect, but not at all. I don't think it's difficult at all to sell beef for, five, six, seven, eight, $9 a pound, for ground beef. I don't think that's difficult. I'm not standing here saying I'm a proponent of price gouging or going out and charging $9 just because you can. That's, don't hear me wrong. That's not at all. In fact, much more the opposite of what I would
No,
direct
it's a
them.
cost of production issue, right, Mike?
Exactly.
Yeah,
Exactly.
we can't do it that cheap. We just cannot do it that cheap. And we have to be able to provide food for our consumers at a profit, or we can't do it. That's the whole thing.
Exactly. I tell all my clients that your price is your price. And what I mean by that is your individual price, right? Shad's price or Mike's price are going to be different based on their input cost, their operational cost. They're going to have two different costs to take a beef, right, to a finished weight than somebody else, and much different than the people who are importing the beef from, wherever. So those factors, I tell my clients, we want a minimum 20% profit margin. Be nice to get around 35% profit margin on our operational cost, and that's what we're going to live on price. Okay. And so that typically, lands people in, obviously, again, there's a lot of different variables here, but going to
Sure.
your main question of, like, how do we get people to buy something like that. And I want people to hear this, because I think this is super important. It took me a long time to understand this, even as a marketer, but that is to get people to look at your products as a solution rather than a product. Okay. And
Good. That's awesome.
yeah, and there's a line that we walk here as marketers. Jaden, I think you'll understand this. I get convicted about this personally, because there's the line of, like, selling somebody something that's not true versus really kind of really laying something out in front of them that solves a problem that they have in their life. Okay. So that problem might look different for different people and for different customers, and different farmers and ranchers are going to attract different customers, but I'll give you a few examples and kind of break that down. So one example would be, let's say somebody is, you know, they, you know, again, kind of, you know, going through COVID, food security is a big deal, right? They want to know they've got freezer in the beef. Like that's a really big deal to them. So when they're sitting down and they want to know they got, you know, beef in the freezer they can trust. Not only do they got beef in the freezer, but they want American beef in the freezer, beef they can trust from a rancher they know. Okay. So when they wake up in the morning and they know that freezer's full of beef, that feeling, that food security feeling, yes, to them, that's priceless.
Yes.
That's priceless. When you talk about a mom, when you have a mom who's got a young family, let's say she's a homeschool mom, and she wants to make sure she's providing food that she can trust, that's going to nourish her kids, that's going to raise her kids in a healthy manner. When she knows that freezer is full of beef, that's trustworthy, that she can raise her family on, she can, you know, be confident in the way that it was raised, and she feels good about it, again, that's priceless. So if we can communicate those things to our customers, and those are very simple. That might be stuff in our emails or on our websites or even on social media. Sometimes, hey, we got beef. You know, hey, we got beef for sale. Hey, come get your whole beef. It's like, no, do you want, would you like to secure your family trustworthy beef from our ranch that we serve our own family for 2024? Right. Wow. So it's yeah, kind of communicating that in a little bit of a different way. So now that customer feels like, oh, wow, like that's what I need. I can trust them. They raise their food this way. There's that connection. Okay. It's a couple dollars more, but I can trust them. To them, price is not even a thing now.
That is such a good point. I mean, it is so incredible that you say that, because I'm obviously a lot older than you guys. And so I've been conditioned through this. I hate to even admit this, but I've been conditioned through this corporate supply chain. You know, it's all about the numbers. But I preach all day and every day in everything I do. I say food security is national security, but never once have I thought about using that as a marketing tool within my own farm to table business. And I'll tell you, it's been our personal farm to table business has been, since COVID, has been phenomenal. It's not the main driver of our business, but it has taken a huge portion of our business. So with that said, I want to ask you this. How do you price your beef? Do you price it? You know, you said you look for at least a 20 to 35% margin on it. Do you price that off the cost of production? Do you price it off of other prices? How do you do that?
Yeah. So I'm going to put a shameless plug in here. We've got a pricing calculator. We actually call it the direct to consumer pricing calculator. I'll send it to you guys. And so maybe y'all can add the link in where people can get it for free. We give it away for free. And what it basically does is tracks all the operational costs. Okay. So everything for your operation. I mean, we go down to the mortgage payments, the diesel fuel, we're talking about every little thing, yeah, right?
Cause it comes out of the cattle, no matter what, it all comes out.
It's all operational cost. And then we're obviously taking things like, you know, live animal costs, feed cost, hay cost, whatever we've got, we're calculating all these things. And then we're looking at where do we need to be at on a, so if we're talking beef, where do we need to be at on a price per head basis? Okay. And then we start to kind of get an idea with that pricing calculator. Basically it's a Google sheet that automatically calculates a profit margin based on all the numbers you put. It's pretty cool. You guys, Chad, I think you'll like it. It'd be cool to you plug some numbers in, see yeah, where it lands you. Now it's obviously not perfect, but what it does give you is a guideline. It says, okay, if you want to be making a 20% minimum, I think 40% kind of, you know, I feel like it's kind of maximum. I think once we start getting over that, you know, we're really pushing it. But I think 30-35% is a sweet spot to be in. And so we take a look at all those things and we're sitting down looking at a price per head. So a lot of my customers, the way that I consult them and the way that I direct them is we first are looking at like a price per head for like a whole beef situation. Now, not all my clients sell a whole beef. Some of them do, some of them don't. A lot of that is up to, you know, the individual and what works best for their operation. There's a lot of ways to skin that cat. But if we're looking at a whole beef situation, is figuring out what a whole beef looks like. And then typically, as we start to break down underneath the whole beef, like we're offering a whole beef bulk discount. And that's a lot of the marketing centered around that is, you know, when you're buying, you're securing a whole beef, you're securing bulk beef. Again, that food security piece we talked about, Chad. And that's really as simple as, like, again, think of an email header, right? Or an email title. And let's say it's January and you've got a processing date coming up in February. Instead of saying, "Hey, our date's coming up," or "Hey, secure your bulk beef," it's like, "Would you like to secure, you know, trustworthy beef for your family in 2024?" Right? It's a small change, but a big impact on the way people perceive it. And so back to price, typically once we start getting under a half, we start going up a little bit in price, right? So typically our quarters, our eighths are, you know, 5-10% more than where we'd be at with our whole. And then if we do bundles or individual cuts, obviously, like, you know, you see a ribeye steak at the grocery store. I mean, gosh, what that thing is per pound is, you know, off the wall. So obviously if we're selling like an individual, you know, piece of ribeye or, you know, two pack ribeye pack or something like that, or even a bundle that has maybe 20, 30 pounds of beef. Obviously, those are going to be higher. And then we've got like our whole beef, like bulk discount, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Okay, so I want to go back a little bit to we kind of started briefly talking about kind of like social media and website and that kind of stuff. So I think that is something, you know, we talked about the time, we talked about just there's a disconnect from that marketing piece. And social media is something that is kind of overwhelming to a lot of people and just coming up with that content, not knowing what to post, not knowing how to caption it. And I think I also wanted to mention this of direct to consumer is a great way to get the younger generation involved in the ranch. But let's go to how can ranchers share their product, market their product on social media in a non-complicated, just simple and effective way? Like, how do they utilize social media and other free tools like Canva, you know, those kind of things to share their story and their product?
I'm so happy we're going here because I have a lot of I think points I'm going to make that people maybe aren't expecting. First point being, I think social media is probably the worst place that you could try to sell your products. And it's the place that everyone lives and everyone wants to sell, everyone sells, because what's the easiest thing to do, the easiest thing to get in front of people? Social media. Now, obviously, it's great for that. Don't hear me wrong. Social media is probably the number one place that you can build awareness, you can build brand, you can kind of introduce yourself to people. But think about yourself for a minute. Think about when was the last time you pulled your phone out and you were scrolling Instagram or Facebook and you're, "I'm about to buy some beef today. Let me go get some beef. I'm about to get my phone out and start scrolling Instagram." It doesn't happen that way. And so people, when we're catching them on Instagram and we're catching them on Facebook, we got to understand that they're not in the mindset to buy. I call it like death scrolling. They're mindlessly scrolling. They're blowing time. They're just kind of like scrolling their phone. And so what we want to do on Instagram is we want to connect. I talked about like those solutions, right, for our customers. So we got to also understand that our customers typically don't care about things we care about. So stuff we care about, maybe like, you know, how we're grazing our paddocks and, you know, how we're moving, you know, this fence charger, you know, whatever the thing is that like we as farmers and ranchers care about, our clients typically don't care about that. They've got their own kind of goals, dreams, they got their own life going on. And so if we can relate what we do to connect with them and just with the goal of building connection, building trust, I think that's the win. And then as far as selling, I think for me, the ultimate goal is really to get people off of Facebook and Instagram and get them into some type of CRM, customer relationship management software that you can kind of control your outreach with them on your terms. I mean, we've all seen with Facebook, you make a Facebook post, Lord only knows what the algorithm's doing, if anyone's going to see it, or some people see it, or who sees it. Where if you're able to send out a text message, let's say you got a, you know, a bulk order coming up and you're able to shoot out a, you know, text messages to, you know, 500 of your past clients or people that were interested, you know, they all got it, right? And so the dynamic's different. Now you're landing them when it's like actually you're kind of engaging with them in a time to buy. Same thing with emails. I'm a big advocate of email marketing, because think about emails. Typically, when people are answering their emails, they're sitting down at their computer, they might be working, or they're going through those emails, if you're providing good email content with a lot of value, you're catching them in a little different frame of mind. Now, I'm not saying not to do social media. I'm just saying I think adjusting our sites on social media of like let's use this to build trust, build community, build awareness, really connect with people. Obviously, we're gonna make the post letting them know we got the whole beef for sale. Obviously, we're gonna let people know of those things. But I think that's a big shift for a lot of like our clients is like, what's our goal and what's our objective with social media? In my mind, it's casting as big a net as possible and then bringing those people in. We've got some strategies we can cover on how we do that. But once they're in and we say like they're in our family now and we're able to market to them on our own terms, whether that's emails and SMS, that's where I think we really see the sales kind of come rolling in.
Yeah, I like that. I like because yeah, like I mean, Shad and I were talking about this before, and he just does stuff on social media, and I told him, I'm like, think about what you could do if you sold other than just on social media. And so I think that's a really interesting of catching their attention, kind of building that connection. So let's talk about strategies. What are some just examples of like social media posts that Shad could go out and post tonight?
Yeah, so I mean, with farmers and ranchers, obviously selling any kind of product that people eat and consume, I think, like recipes are a great one. Recipes are so good. There's a
That's a
lot
good
of good,
idea.
yeah, recipes are, it's kind of low-hanging fruit. It gives people, gives them ideas on how they can use your product. It gets them to use your product sooner. So if they're using your product sooner, they got to buy from you sooner. So you got that kind of working for you too. I like seasonal recipes. I like recipes is great for social media, for email marketing, for I mean even having if you had like a blog on the website or had some type of resource page on the website. I think recipes are fantastic. Especially so I'm gonna take us back here. Y'all hold on. Going back to that dream customer and solving a solution for her. All of my clients I see typically you see moms are the dream customer. And moms are typically who's buying the food and they're buying food for the family. And so like let's ask the question, what type of problems do moms typically have? Well, one, they're probably busy, they got a lot of stuff going on, everyone's nagging for their attention, whether it's the kids, the husband, whatever, and they got to put dinner together. So if we can give them quick and easy family meals recipes, now we're doing two things. We're offering our product as a solution to that mom's biggest problem throughout her day. And that is like, hey, here's five recipes, quick and easy family recipes, quick and easy healthy family recipes for moms on the go, right? If we made a reel about that, hey, here's a quick and easy recipe for busy moms on the go. That is doing a lot of good things. It's solving a problem for our dream customers. It's meeting them where they are in their life and putting our products in a place to do that. And that's where I think you win on social media with content strategies like that.
So
Yeah, I
how
think that's.
valuable,
I'm sorry.
okay, let me ask my question because I think it's going to be a quick answer for him.
Sorry.
So how valuable is it of like, when I was in school, it was always about telling the story of agriculture, which it wasn't specific to like marketing products. It was more just like advocating for agriculture, I guess I would say. And so like what we talked about a lot was telling our story. And like whether that was day in the life posts or interviews of, I like we have a magazine at our cafe and I always have a story about a member or a board member and just their operation, just kind of telling that story. So how valuable is that to share just like pictures of your life, like it's calving season right now. And so how valuable is it to post those kinds of things? Does it really, I mean, that's an easy post for somebody to create, I feel like.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm gonna roll on this one for a second because there's some stuff that I think is really important on this piece. And so when I think about this, when you say story, I think branding. And I think a lot of people get branding wrong. When they hear branding, they think logos, design, color palette, all these branding things. And I want people to kind of get this, and it took me a while to get this, but for your operation. Okay, there's a difference between what I'd call a personal brand and like the national brands. The national brands like a Coca-Cola or those type of brands. When you think of Coca-Cola, you think of the Coke sign, you think of red, you think of Coke, right? All those things, brand colors, logo, none of that stuff matters. You, for your operation, you can literally push that stuff. It doesn't mean a thing. We're not a national brand. We are a personal brand. So what matters for your brand is your story, your family, your ranch, all those things, your calving season, Jaden, as you mentioned, those things matter. If you're, you know, super outgoing pro Second Amendment and you know, that's like your thing, post about that, talk about that. If you're whatever it is you are about, post about that and talk about that, because what that's going to do is that's going to build a stronger connection with the people that you're selling to, right? And that's going to build, everyone's got different personalities and everyone's got different things they're interested in. And that's where you're going to see, you could have two, you know, neighboring ranches that are both selling direct to consumer. They're not in competition with one another because they're not selling. When you really look at the market as a whole, there's so many people that are looking for this. And as small, I say small time, you know, not being like the big four, right? We're all relatively, to some degree, smaller producers. And so if we are kind of posting and sharing about things that matter to us, we're going to draw in people that are connected to us. And that might be look different from the neighbor down the road because he's interested in different things, or maybe he's about different things. And that's okay because we both are going to draw people individually. So I think the understanding of that personal branding of like your life, your story, your brand, when you want people to think of Shad, I don't know the name of your ranch, but you told me earlier, you know, when you tell people that things are, you know, the way they're raised and what they're fed, when someone thinks of your ranch, they should think about that moment. They shook your hand, they looked Shad in the eyes, and Shad told them he wouldn't give his beef anything he wouldn't feed to his own family. That is what they think of, not the Coca-Cola logo. They think of that moment they shook Shad's hand. And so there's definitely a difference between like the corporate branding versus like branding for like a, you know, family operation.
Yeah, totally personal relationship.
Yep.
Okay,
Wow.
should I go back to what you were going to ask?
I
That
forgot what
was
I'm
the
so old, I forgot what I was going to ask.
perfect answer. Oh man.
Well, was it Freedom, Big Four? I'm trying to think.
I can't remember what it was. Oh, I know what it was. There is one of Jaden's questions. It's all about if you want to grow, right? And so I've told Jaden even this that I don't want to grow. I have a customer base, and I will. How, I guess my question to you is, how do different areas of the country dip? Are they different? And I like where you're in Georgia, and we know that most of the cattle are raised in the Southeast on an average herd size of 20 to 40 cows. And then you get out west where I'm at, and you have cities that are 20 to 100 miles apart. Your closest neighbor is 10 miles, and so that looks different, and the income is different. How do you navigate that, or do you navigate that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a big piece of this whole puzzle, right? I think that kind of culminates almost everything we've kind of talked about. It's like, you know, even here, I live in a rural community. You know, we're about an hour and 45 from Atlanta, so we're out there a bit. And the people that live in this rural community, and I think you'd say the same, Chad, for everyone, you know, probably out where you are in different parts of the country. Typically, you're not going to always, the density of people that are going to have, you know, when we talked about, hey, what's the reason people buy? Is it price, quality, convenience? What are those reasons? And you're typically not going to see people choosing the health side. You're going to see a lot of like your really health conscious people living in a lot of those affluent areas, in the suburbs of the cities. And, you know, you got a lot of just a higher density. I'm not saying they don't live in rural areas by any means, but you get higher densities. And so, depending on your size and what your goals are and how much you really are trying to grow, tapping into those, you know, those suburb communities, those more affluent areas, there's a lot of market there. There's a lot of demand there. And so to be able to do that, you know, there's a lot of logistics in place, and that might require shipping, that might require, you know, some type of delivery thing. But shipping is where we push a lot of our clients. We set all of our clients up with shipping in that whole process, which is kind of a whole thing. So I'm happy to jump into any of that if you think it'd be helpful. But I think that's kind of ultimately for someone who's in a rural area who feels like they don't have a great customer base around them and their neighbor won't pay the, you know, $9.99 they need to be profitable. The answer is, well, hey, the people in Salt Lake will, the people in Denver will. And so I think shipping to them is kind of the answer there.
So I do want to go into the shipping thing because I think that, I mean, we were just at my grandparents last night talking about the shipping and, one of my uncle's questions was, how do you go from just like, I mean, we go and we send our cattle to just a local processor and, we get this white packaging and, how do you go from like just the packaging to a more custom personal, I know we said not logos aren't as important, but like, how do you make it more personal and like just the shipping part of it too? I don't know. It all goes over my head. So just go with that wherever you want. But
You see, if you guys are on Instagram, you see people that, they've got the boxes with their logos on them, and the thank you cards and all the, really pretty stuff, which is great. I mean, having the thank you card, handwritten cards, obviously that stuff goes a long way. I'm a big proponent in that, but you see these things and it's like, how do I do that? I talk to a lot of producers that it feels like unachievable. They can't figure it out. They don't know what that looks like. And really, I'll tell you, I mean, I help farmers and ranchers with all their marketing and infrastructure build out, and we help them with things like shipping and consulting on this stuff. And that's what we do. But I tell everybody, I mean, all this information is out there. You can go out and find it, right? So like, I mean, you can go out on YouTube and you can search how to ship beef. It's out there. We've got resources. If people want to reach out, they can email us. Like, we've got resources too. We've got free shipping resources they can look at. So the information's there, to go out and just do the digging and find it. I'm happy to break it down now as well. I just want to let people know that all of this stuff, from social media to email marketing to websites, like all the stuff's there to go out and find and to do. As far as shipping goes, really there's kind of there's some best practices. I don't know how you guys, you think it'd be helpful for me to like really go down to like the nuts and bolts of like what packaging a shipment looks like, or maybe sourcing materials, because I know those are kind of like two different.
Chad, what do you think? You.
Yeah, I mean, all of it's very interesting. I've learned a lot from you already today, and you're like, what are you, 13, 14 years old?
I'm
I mean,
32. I'm
I
32.
have really learned a lot. I do want to ask this one question though. So do you have clients all across America?
I do. I do. I got clients from Washington to Florida.
So do you, what is the okay, so like for my federally inspected facility is just 30 miles away, but they're thinking about closing that, especially with what's coming on require environmental requirements. And so then that moves my next inspected facility to about 150 miles, and then the next one's in another state. So how do your clients have problems navigating that?
Yeah, I mean, occasionally we come up with those problems. Like you said, it's all regional dependent. So that's something we help with, as well as kind of consulting through that processing piece, and kind of consulting through those relationships and, different, how to navigate those, really navigate those relationships. Because for the producer that is reliant on a processor, I've got several clients that have their own facilities, but for the client that is really like, that's their most important relationship. If you think about a business relationship, you can't have your operation without that operation. And so we really try to help people navigate how to put your best foot forward with that relationship. Just some things you do, just honestly basic business tactics. I think a lot of people look at that relationship and sometimes there's frustration on, the producer side, and then you've got the processor side, and there's sometimes it's like clashing. And I'm like, hey guys, like, let's go break bread. Let's probably not go talk to them at their work of, business when they're working. Let's ask, offer to take them out to lunch, take them to a dinner, sit down with them, have a conversation. Hey, like, how can we be a great client of yours? We're looking at bringing, we'd like to bring, 60, 70 head this year. What can we do with you that's going to help you out, for the next, and having these conversations in a place that's, not obviously while they're in the middle of working and running the cash register, right? I think that's helpful. But we help people navigate those relationships. It's different all across the country. Some places there's, a ton of processors. We've got a bit of a network now of a lot of processors that we kind of worked with and, recommended. But there are places where, people got to drive 4, 5, 6 hours or wait a year because that's all they got.
Well, do you have any concerns about, like, I see a lot of stuff in the news about these Amish farmers and the feds coming in and then there's liability. How do you work through all that?
I mean, That's an interesting piece there. I think in a lot of ways it's very case by case. I like to have I like to give people the benefit of the doubt as much as possible. Obviously, when we see a lot of these stories and stuff online, we don't always know all sides of the story and the history of
Sure.
things.
Sure.
It's an interesting piece when you start getting into that, right? Like, where are things going? What direction? Because I think, again, regionally dependent, what the leadership in that area is, I think those are all things that are going to impact what that looks like and what those regulations are going to ultimately look like. I see a lot of people. I mean, like I said, I see a lot of there's I probably talk to people every single week that are in the process of applying for whether funding, grants, whatever, to build their own facility because the money's, I mean, there people there the money's there to do it, if people can get approved for it. And so I see a lot of people go in that direction because of the concerns of not being able to have the person do it.
Very interesting.
So I want to go another direction for a second, and kind of go towards, there's another consumer that we really haven't talked about, and that's like businesses and restaurants. So do you have any advice on, somebody that maybe wants to target those kinds of consumers?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will say this, I don't spend a ton of time pushing my clients to target restaurants. And here's the reason. And then I'll tell you who should be targeting restaurants, in my opinion. Now, produce or anything that's produced on like a very short cycle, maybe, like broilers or something like that, or, you like your produce producers, that's a little bit different. But for most of your beef producers, pork, lamb, kind of your main proteins, if you are big enough, if you're so big that you were like, man, if I had a restaurant that, wanted me to bring them 5 head of beef every single month for ground beef, that would actually help me out because I've got too many steers that are ready, or I'm sitting on too much ground beef and I could move, 1,000 pounds of ground beef every month. Then absolutely, you need to get a restaurant, get a contract locked down because that could be really good for you. Now, if you're one of your smaller producers or, on the smaller side where, you're only moving 20 or 30 head direct to consumer and you're kind of at capacity, it makes no sense to pursue a restaurant because you're already selling direct, you're getting top retail value. You don't have a need really to go out and, pursue those people. So I that's how I kind of consult my clients on it. I like the restaurant contracts can almost be like a stepping stone. If you're producing, let's say you're running, 20, 30 head and you're selling them direct to consumer, but you want to get to where you're running 200 head, right? That's a big jump. And it's hard to just make that jump overnight and expect that you're going to sell all those animals. But a restaurant contract could help you make the jump, right? Because then you've got, hey, you got this many that are, accounted for, you're moving, you're selling, and then you're able to kind of use that to like as a stepping stone, if you will, for growth. But I think for most of your beef producers, unless we're really big and that sort of thing, I really like to stick to the direct to consumer to get that full retail price out.
Yeah, that's good advice. Because I know that's like kind of one of those things that people would love for their, local restaurants to be serving local beef, but it isn't necessarily feasible for all operations. And I think that's another thing of, direct to consumer is going to look different for every single operation. And I
Yeah.
think a lot of people don't realize that, and they compare themselves to like the, we were talking about the white oak pastures of, they sell a ton of meat. And not just beef. Well, I mean, that's not even going to compare to somebody that's just selling, 10 head a year. And
That's
so,
right.
I think I don't really know where I want to go next.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, I mean, throw this in there real quick, Jaden, because I want to make sure I'm clear on this. You mentioned like the local restaurant having the local beef. That's kind of an exception. I'll make an exception there, because to me, that's not really about moving the beef anymore. It's kind of now about the marketing. It's about getting my name out there. So there is definitely a place if you've got like a local restaurant, that's kind of obviously kind of puts out like a high quality product, and you'd like to have your beef, your steaks on that menu, even if it's on the weekends or something along those lines, to really be a marketing thing. That's a little bit different of a situation. I think just be careful with obviously who you're targeting, or what restaurant you're kind of partnering with, that you, kind of the people you want to be selling to or kind of eating at that restaurant, whatever that looks like for your individual operation. But there's definitely a place for that for even like the smaller producers as well.
Gotcha. Okay, Shad, what other questions do you have as we're
Well, I
getting close
guess
to that?
my last question would be twofold. And number one is, let's say that I run a few cattle and I need to supplement my income and diversify a little bit. What's the first step I need to take? And number two, the second part of not that question, but maybe a second question is, have you, what kind of failures have you seen on this end? Or
Yeah.
on the other end of that. So you start up, and then what makes them fail?
Yeah. So, man, that's a great question. So, a couple of things. I'll start with this. Number one, starting a business isn't easy. Yes, there's a demand out there. Yes, there's a demand for farm fresh products. Yes, there's a market out there, but it doesn't make it easy. You're still starting a business. You're still stepping into entrepreneurialism, and there's still a whole new thing. Now you're dealing with customers and you're dealing with retail pricing and fulfillment and all this stuff. So they're definitely, I always want to be clear with that with customer or with my potential clients, is that like, yes, there's a market out there, but you are getting yourself into an entire another ball game here. So for that person looking to get started, just want to make sure, like, number one, we're on like the same page there, right? That this is like starting a business is no walk in the park.
Right.
It can be done, but it's difficult. It's just like operating a ranch. It's not a walk in the park, right? There's the good days and there's the rough days and there's days you got to push through, but it's what makes it all pay off, right? So that's kind of number one. As far as like what I see, well, let me keep going on the track of what people kind of need to do, like first thing, right? So first thing, really, it's building that customer database. So Shad, you mentioned like you're not trying to grow. You've got a customer database. They're buying what you want them to be buying from you every year. It is that's you're in a good spot. So that's the first, that's what someone who's starting needs to get to. So they've got to grow that database of customers. They got to grow a network of people that desire to buy that product and be able to retain that list of people and be able to reach out to them on their terms. So I mentioned like a CRM software earlier to be able to text, email them. It'd be great. We set a lot of automations up for our clients. So like you're not having to just go through the Rolodex and like call every person every time you want,
Yeah.
to let them know, right? So we can automate
Right.
some of that. So there's a lot of strategies in building that list. I always tell all of our clients, like step number one is your warm network, right? Obviously friends, family, local businesses, local people, local gyms. There's a lot of things we go through, but like warm network is kind of step number one. And there's some strategies we kind of implement in growing that list, but growing that list is the main focus for the first part of that business. Cause that's really who you are marketing to at the end of the day. So that's a big piece. And then as far as, the big things I see, people fail on, there's a couple of them and I want to go through them, but I will say number one, top things, people getting into too many products at one time. So like you mentioned, Jaden, like the White Oak Pastures of, and I understand because I think the regenerative model, there's a lot of things to learn from the regenerative model. I think there's a lot of really cool stuff going on at, I'm a big believer that, God designed this world to, operate in his design. And if we can use animals,
Amen.
yeah. And if we can use animals the way they were designed, it makes a lot of sense. Okay. And it makes a lot of sense though, for the person to go, oh, now I want to do, chickens and pigs and cattle, and I'm going to, rotationally graze. I'm gonna do this and this, this, this. But what they don't realize is from an economics and a business standpoint, we're really starting like three separate ventures, might be three different list of clients. It might be three really total, like different operational costs, different needs, different infrastructure. And those are all kind of like, no-no-nos when it comes to business, right? It's like, let's focus on one product. Let's make that one product profitable. And then once that one product's off, profitable, we've got a good foundation, let's introduce the second and then get it up and running and profitable and then introduce the third. And I want to say one last thing, kind of speaking to that. And what that is I read this in a book somewhere, I don't recall, but it spoke to me a lot as an entrepreneur, which if you're selling direct, that's, what you are, right? Is you're a business owner. And that is what I was told is kind of the five stages of business ownership. Okay. And like stage number one is that, like, we call it, it's like that, it's you're in that, like, you're very naive. your excited, naive stage. It's like, I'm excited. I'm going to sell direct. Everyone's going to want to buy my beef. It's going to be great. They're going to be ordering. I'm going to have stacks of boxes that are going to be shipped out, and everything's going to be awesome, right? And you really don't know what you're getting into, but you're super excited, okay? And everyone goes through that. Nothing wrong with it. But step two is kind of like where you kind of get punched in the face a little bit and you realize, oh, wow, there's a lot more to this. This is a lot harder than I think. This is like, you're now, it's like stage two, you're aware of reality. So stage one, it's like you're naive and excited. Stage two is like reality. Okay. And stage three is where things start getting really, really hard. You're going through the process of scaling. You're going through the process of growing. You're not where you want to be yet. Maybe you're a little frustrated. You want this to get bigger. You want it to happen tomorrow, and it's not happening tomorrow. It's been 6, 9 months. And then you start looking at like, what's the problem? Is it, am I not offering the right products? Is it too expensive? Should I market to this area? Should I do that? And sure, there could be things that need to be changed, but for the most part, it's just doing the small, hard things and keeping going and continuing to grow, continuing to develop. And what happens is a lot of people quit in phase three. They think something's the problem and they quit. They do something else, or they say, this is not for me, or people don't want to buy it, or they do whatever. And they never get to stage four, where you start to really see some success. And then in stage five is where you have this like mature business that is operating on its own. It's predictable. It's profitable. It's, you know, it's that whole thing. So
I guess it's all about consistency and persistence, right? You can't jump in and out of the game. That's with any business. You have to stay with it through the good and the bad. And then you have to be persistent. You have to say, okay, I'm going to stay hooked. I'm going to be persistent in my work ethic, my confidence. We're going to see bad days, but we're going to see good days too. And so that's where people kind of, when they don't, you know, it's such a immediate response nation now, you know, we want immediate gratification, and that's not what business is about. It's about hard work and persistence. So that was really, really interesting. I really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh yeah, I've enjoyed it too. No, absolutely. It's the game of owning a business is not easy, and it's definitely takes hard work and persistence.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess, Mike, do you have anything else to add before we kind of start to close out here?
No, not really. I think we covered a bunch. I hope it was helpful for anyone looking to get started. And, you know, I will say, you know, we've said it's hard, but I will say anyone can do it too, with the same breath, you know, anyone can do it. Just a matter of, again, being persistent, working hard, and, you know, the resources are there, and just putting it together.
That's awesome.
Well,
so what I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jake.
Oh, you go. You go.
Well, I guess, you know, we're focused on beef here. And although we do at RCAF USA, we do represent a lot of sheep ranchers, but I'm all about beef. And so what is your favorite cut of beef and how do you like it prepared?
Oh man. So I saw that on the thing and I was excited to share this with you guys. I thought you would get a kick out of this. Maybe we'll see. So growing up, I grew up in the subdivision. Like I said, you know, filet was kind of like, they never ate fat, you know, gristle, like that always got pushed to the side of the plate kind of thing. So like a ribeye, T-bone was not, I was like, you know, growing up, I was like, ew, I don't want to eat that. You know, it was like filets. Filets were the thing. Filet was my cut. And since I've been in the community growing my own food, when you start getting some of your higher quality steaks and you start eating some of that fat that is just like so good, I would say I've went from a filet guy to like a ribeye guy. I'm a ribeye guy now. And so, yeah. And so I enjoy that. It's been an interesting like journey to go from the filet to the ribeye, but that's where I'm at.
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Me too. Oh.
Okay, Mike, where can people find you and follow along? And, you know, I know you have a business, so give us your website, social media, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so social media is Direct Farm Marketing. And the website is www.directfarmroadmap.com. And then, as I mentioned earlier, that pricing calculator, I'll get you guys a link on that to check that out, because that's a really great resource that really anyone can use no matter what they're selling, if they're selling beef or lamb or whatever it is. I think that's, you know, pretty cool, pretty helpful. So yeah, there you go. Thank you all so much. I really enjoyed it. I hope it was helpful for listeners. Hope people can kind of walk away with some valuable stuff there, and would love to do it again.
Yeah, awesome.
Super job. Yeah, really super job. I just want to close saying this, because I'm all about liberty and freedom, and a beef and liberty. Where there is beef, there is freedom.
Thank you so much, Mike, for joining us today and for sharing so much great and valuable information. We have links in the show notes, and be sure to go find Mike's direct-to-consumer farm marketing platform on social media and online. We are also excited to announce that Mike will be presenting at our 2024 convention, so you can get even more information on building and growing your direct-to-consumer business. RCAF USA also has a great platform to help you with this, and that is usabeef.org. This is where you can list your information and what you're selling, and consumers can search based on their location and what they're looking for. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and let us know what you think and how we're doing. Be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. And be sure to give us a follow at RCAF USA on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. RCAF USA is set apart from all other national cattle associations because we rely solely on membership dues and donations to carry out our mission to ensure the continued profitability and independence of U.S. cattle and sheep producers. We exist only because of the support from our members. Call 406-252-2516 or go to r-calfusa.com to become a member.